focus on Christ. Thank you, Dr. Polly. Thank you, orchestra. You may be dismissed. Would you go to Numbers chapter 16 with me. Numbers chapter 16. I want to take a look at the area, topic of contentment versus discontentment. Numbers chapter 16. Let me just kind of give you an intro to the chapters, not just the verses we're looking at next couple of weeks. Numbers 16 through 17, let me back up. There are several chapters we looked at previously that really legitimize Moses' leadership. And it's very clear that the author of Numbers, Moses, is showing that some tried to usurp his authority, but he is the God-called leader there in Israel. The chapters we're going to, 16 through 17, kind of put the focus on Aaron now and legitimize his priesthood. And his leadership is going to be challenged, and Moses and Aaron will both step up and defend that, and the Lord will judge those that lift their hand against Aaron. Now, the obvious application when God defends the priesthood of Aaron is that only the God-appointed priest can come before the Lord. That's the obvious application here. That only the one God chooses can come before the Lord. Now, the balance of this, if you step back and you look at the whole Pentateuch, not just Numbers, but the whole Pentateuch, these two things become abundantly obvious about the high priest. Number one, you can only come through the appointed high priest. But number two, this particular high priest is flawed. And so we carry those principles to the New Testament. We see, number one, you can only come through the rightful high priest, Jesus Christ, but he is the perfect high priest, as Hebrews says. One of the things I love about the Bible, and what I really think verifies and witnesses to the truth of God's word, it always shoots you straight about the leaders. It never glorifies the leaders. Even knowing this section of Scripture legitimizes Aaron as the rightful priest, you know, a couple chapters ago, Aaron is the one lifting his hand against Moses. And when Miriam, when she turns leprous, he has an inability to heal her. He has to cry out for a mediator himself. And as you read through the Word of God, it never glorifies the leaders. It only glorifies God. That's true with Abraham. That's true with Moses. It's true with Aaron. It's true with David. It's true with Peter. I mean, who writes a book like this? All the other books that you read, all the other religious books, it glorifies the leader. And then it says, if you act like the leader, you can one day end up in paradise just like them. And yet when you read through the Bible, it seems to say, look at how flawed all these leaders are. Look at how imperfect they are. Even when they are in their rightful place, like Aaron here in the book of Numbers, he is still flawed. In other words, there is one greater that still needs to come, and that climax is in Jesus Christ. And so here we have a defense of Aaron's priesthood. Now, what I want to look at today is something a little different than defending Aaron's priesthood, though we're going to talk more about that. I want to talk about discontentment. And let's kind of take the verses this way. We'll walk through them, we'll look at what they say, and then we'll step back and get some principles about what it means to be discontent. And then I think we'll end on a real high note about the grace of God in our lives if we'll submit ourselves. Now, notice in verse 1 of chapter 16, I want you to notice there are two groups, and we'll get back to these in a minute. Now, Korah, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, and Dathan and Abiram, the son of Eliab, and On, the son of Peleth, the sons of Reuben, took men. Now, there's a lot of names in there, but there's basically two groups. You have Korah, and then you have the sons of Reuben. And so throughout this passage, I'll just refer to them as Korah and Reuben. Korah and Reuben. Verse 2 says, they rose up before Moses with certain of the children of Israel. 250 princes in the assembly, famous in the congregation, men of renown. Now in verse 3, we're going to have the complaint of Korah. And they gathered themselves together against Moses and Aaron, and said unto them, ye take too much upon you, seeing all the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Wherefore you lift up yourselves above the congregation of the Lord. And when Moses heard it, he fell upon his face. Now, if you scan down to verse 18, he addresses Korah's complaint. Moses says unto Korah, hear, I pray you. Your translation may say, please listen to me, Korah. Son of Levi, seemeth it a small thing unto you that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel? to bring you near to himself and to do service of the tabernacle of the Lord and to stand before him in the congregation to minister unto them. And so Korah says, verse 3, why can everybody come into the holiest of holies? And Moses says, do you think it's a small thing that you only serve in the courts? So after addressing Korah, verse 12, he turns his attention to the sons of Reuben. And Moses sent a call of Dathan and Abiram. And by the way, you see Dathan and Abiram, but you don't see On here in this passage. Verse 1, On is with them, but in verse 12, he's not mentioned. Why not? Maybe he repented of his sin. Maybe he's a minor figure in this story. We're not quite sure. Nevertheless, the sons of Reuben come into focus. Look at what they say to Moses, verse 13. They use his words and turn them on him. Is it a small thing that thou hast brought us up out of the land that floweth with milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness, except thou make thyself altogether a prince over us? Wherefore thou hast not brought us unto a land that floweth with milk and honey, or givest us the inheritance of the fields and the vineyards. Wilt thou put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up. And so we have Korah, and then the sons of Reuben are addressed. Now, let me give you a couple points on the story, and then we want to draw some principles about being discontent. First of all, the agitators. Notice we have two agitators in the story, Korah and then the sons of Reuben. Now, Korah is a Levite from the tribe of Levi. He is called, you remember the Levites were divided into different groups. The particular group he was in simply served in the courts. They carried the sacred equipment. They would set up and tear down the tabernacle. And so when the cloud would move and Moses would say, let's go, the sons of Korah would take all the equipment, pack it away, and they'd be the one to carry it. They would also lead in worship. They would also lead in singing. We're going to see that in the Psalms. And one of the few things that they could not do is enter into the holiest of holies and perform a sacrifice. So that's group one. Now, group two, kind of twisted in here, is the sons of Reuben. We can't be sure why On is not mentioned, but we know they're the sons of Reuben. They were positioned right next to Korah and his band. And so misery loves company. They begin to conspire together, and they kind of raise their heads up against Moses. Now, Korah's complaint in verse 3, which we read, is very clear. He says to Moses, he says, you take too much. Moses, why do you take so much responsibility? Now, here's the irony. If you've been following the story through Numbers, like many of you have, you know Moses is not trying to acquire power. Moses is trying to do what? He's trying to divest himself of power. Every chance Moses gets, he's trying to give power to somebody else. It's God who has given this power to Moses. But Korah's got this backwards, and he says, you are called by yourself. You're a power-hungry kind of person. He's got it completely backwards. He says, seeing that all of the congregation is holy, all of them should be able to come before the Lord. Now, what is Korah alluding to here in verse 3? Remember back in chapter 15, the Israelites, they were told to put what at the edge of their garments? Put what? Tassels. And now all of them have tassels hanging off their garments. And so Korah comes along and sees all the people wearing tassels. And he says, look, all the people are holy. All of them are kind of dressed like a priest. Shouldn't they all be able to come before the Lord? Now what Korah is trying to do here, and you're going to see this in a minute, he looks like a populist. He looks like he's standing up for all people, but he's really trying to make a power grab for himself. And we're going to see that here in verse 8. Take a look real quick. Moses says unto Korah, here I pray you, son of Levi, seemeth it a small thing unto you? Notice what he does. He doesn't even address Korah's concern about the people. He says, don't you see that it's a great calling God has given you? He has separated you from the congregation of Israel. He has brought you near to himself. You can stand before the congregation and minister unto them. Moses, in verse 9 here, what he's saying is Korah, it's a great privilege to serve God the way that he's called you to serve him. And so you can see that Moses looks right through the smokescreen and sees that Korah is making a power grab for himself. Now, before I give you the principles, you need to see Reuben's response too. And we read it in verse 13. Here's what Reuben says to Moses when he's confronted. It's a small thing. Remember verse 9, what Moses said to Korah? It's a small thing. Reuben throws this right back in Moses' face. Sarcasm. It's a small thing that you brought us out of the land that floweth with milk and honey. That is what God called the promised land. And now Reuben is calling the land that floweth with milk and honey Egypt. He's full of sarcasm. He is snide. He is sarcastic. And he just wants to get rid of Moses. The farther removed they are from Egypt, the more they glorify the old days of slavery. They're snide, they're sarcastic, the whole world is sour. And by the way, when your life begins to be riddled with bitterness, when you become discontent with what God has called you to do, one of the first things that happens is you start to distort the truth. Now, they were slaves back in Egypt. And every time they talk about Egypt, all they can talk about is the leeks, onions, and the melons. How come nobody mentions, hey, remember when they took our women for slaves? Remember when they made us make the bricks and put them together? When the whips came across our backs? When you become bitter, what happens is you downplay the blessings of God and you upplay the disasters in your life. All the things that are wrong, you magnify 10 times. All the things that are right, you kind of take them down. You that have little kids and you that just like to do little kid things, right? When you go over to Gaddy Town, they have a couple of mirrors, you know, on the other side of town. And some of you are laughing because you don't even have kids and you go to Gaddy Town, right? I'm not going to point you out. I've seen you at the buffet. Gaddy, you know, they have these mirrors. And you walk into the hallway and there's this one mirror that kind of distorts your figure. And it just, you put any object in front of it and it distorts that object, almost like the old house of mirrors. Well, that's what's happening through discontentment. Everything these people look at, it has a distortion to it. It alters the shape of everything offered to them. Bitterness is like one of those mirrors. And when you find yourself bitter in this life, your job, your family, your calling, everything is distorted like one of those mirrors. You find yourself downplaying the blessings of God and magnifying the disasters in your life. Now, we'll skip over the judgment till next week, but let me back up and make some principles about discontentment. First of all, this can apply to any area of your life. Now, for the Reubenites, it has to do with food and with a house. For Korah, he doesn't have the right vocation. He doesn't have the ministry. He's not content with what God has called him to do. For Korah, people just don't appreciate his skills, and that makes him very discontent with God's calling in his life. For them, it was political, and it was kind of situational, but for us, it can apply in many different ways. For some of us, we're old-fashioned in our discontentment. We don't have enough money. We don't have enough cars. Our cars aren't fast enough. They're not pretty enough. Your house isn't big enough. Your countertops aren't made of the right stone or material. Your spouse isn't attractive enough. Your kids aren't living up to what you want them to be. A lot of us are very old-fashioned in our discontentment. Others of us, we could just never achieve enough. You're frustrated that you're not fast enough. You're not smart enough. You're unhappy with the way God has created your body. You're unhappy with the intelligence or lack of that he has given to you. And by the way, this is tricky. This can even be in relation to ministry. Because what Korah is not upset about how much he has or doesn't have. He spiritualizes this. Korah is upset over spiritual things. I don't have enough ministry. God is not using my skills enough. People around me don't recognize how much of a blessing I could be if given the opportunity. And so we even do it with ministry. We can be discontent where God has put us there. And if you really stop and think about it, as I did this week for a while, think how terrible this disease of discontentment can destroy your life. Think about how it ruins your day. Think about how it causes you to act when you walk into your house and address your family as soon as you walk in. Think about how it tears down what a witness you can be in the community. It takes away your joy as you magnify the disasters and downplay the blessings of God. Now, here's what I want you to see about discontentment. First of all, I want you to see the diversity of discontentment, the diversity. So often, when we categorize things, we are very narrow and very superficial. When you and I think about a discontent person, what do we think of? We think about the tribe of Reuben. I mean, scowling looks, sarcasm. Reuben looks like an atheist here. Look what he says in verse 13. It's a small thing that you brought us out into the land to die. They throw Moses' words right back in his face. Reuben is openly discontent, hates his job, hates his house, hates his family, pushes people away from him, completely disillusioned about everything God has called him to be. Reuben is the kind of person that walks around and everybody around him knows how discontent and bitter he is. Reuben's the kind of person that has a scowling look and just says, hey, I just call it like I see it, right? I'm not afraid to let people know what I'm thinking. And somewhere along the way, you've met a Reuben type. You've probably played the Reuben type. For many of us, when we think about bitter people, we think about Reuben types. The reason this passage is very important to us is because it introduces a second way to be discontent or a second way to show bitterness. Reuben is very open in how discontent he is. But notice, Korah is very crafty, very slick, and very hidden from bitterness. Korah represents a second kind of bitterness. Whereas Reuben wears that anger right out on his sleeve, Korah puts up a smoke screen. Remember what Korah said in verse 3? He sounds like a populist, doesn't he? I mean, all of God's people are holy. All of God's people should come into the temple. He looks like he's coming, you know what it looks like? It looks like he's fighting for truth, justice, and the Jewish way, you know? He's the all-American folk hero here. He's just fighting for the common man on the street. And by the way, it looks like he's fighting for the glory of God. It looks like he's debating truth. All of that is a smokescreen. He's actually making a power grab for himself. Reuben is very open about his bitterness. Korah is very slick, and it's very concealed. There are two ways to express your bitterness before the Lord. And I would suggest to you that everybody at some level expresses bitterness one way or the other. Reuben is unspiritual. Korah looks spiritual. Reuben is irreverent. Korah looks reverent. Reuben is salty and abrasive. Korah is refined and thoughtful. Reuben is out for himself. Korah is out for the people. They are so different, and yet they are wallowing in the same discontentment. Some of us wear it on our sleeves. We're sarcastic. We're angry. We let people know it. Others of us are slick and sophisticated like Reuben. Now, which way do you walk in bitterness? Which way do you wear this? Are you open and aggressive? Or do you hide it and put it behind a smoke screen, kind of like Korah here? Almost look like you're fighting for the good of the people. The same motive here of discontentment. And what they both have in common, as different as they look on the surface, the one thing they have in common, both of them are discontent where God has put them. One comes out and says, God promised me this and never delivered. The other says, hey, I'm doing this for the glory of God. The diversity of discontentment. The second thing I want you to see is the symphony of discontentment. The symphony of discontentment. Now, here's what I find interesting. Moses here weaves together two stories of discontentment. He goes back and forth, Korah to Reuben, Korah to Reuben. And one of the most interesting things here is how both of these stories are embedded together. Their complaints are very different. And what Moses is telling us here, not only are there two ways to be discontent, he's telling us that discontent people tend to what? Tend to flock together. My undergrad is in political science, and, you know, I've seen enough elections to kind of see how elections go, not only in our country, but around the world. And if you watch the election process long enough and hard enough, you realize that the vast majority of votes that are cast in an election are not for a candidate, but against the other candidate. Am I right? And in the campaigning process, you will often see all kinds of people that have nothing in common, completely different agendas, get behind the same candidate and push that candidate forward. Not because they like that candidate, because they so hate the other candidate running. That's what we see here. Korah has religious concerns. Reuben has political concerns, and they both find themselves moving against Moses. It's not because they agree on the topic of conversation. It's that they're both bitter, they're both discontent with the status quo, and so they try to usurp the authority of Moses. The principle here is too easy. Misery loves company. The Kohathites were at the south end of the tabernacle. The tribe of Reuben was right next to them. They begin complaining to each other. Though they are completely different in nature, it seems that they have nothing in common. But because they are both unsatisfied with the will of God, they conspire together. Misery loves company. Congregation, take note how often complaining, discontent people find company in each other's presence. And it's amazing how magnetic complainers are one to another. Discontent people are generally open to the gossip of others. Misery attracts misery. They're a magnet for murmuring and complaining, and that's what we see here in this text. Now, here's the question every one of us in this congregation needs to ask. What does it say if you're a magnet for a complaining person? What does it say if you are the kind of person, when somebody has a complaint, they immediately come to you? When someone's discontent with the will of God, they just unload right in front of you. You just kind of an open door or a magnet for that kind of individual. What does that say? Could it be that they sense a discontent in your life and they feel like, therefore, they have the liberty to unload their discontent and murmuring before you? The diversity of discontentment, the symphony of discontentment. And here's another thing I want you to notice. Just as there are two ways that you can be discontent, there are two different styles to be discontent in. And here's what I mean. Providence versus personal choice. Keep those words in mind for a minute. Providence versus personal choice. Korah is discontent because of the providence of God. He was born a Levite. He's in a priestly caste system. The Lord has determined before Korah was even born where he would serve and what he would serve. Korah is angry at Moses because of what God is providentially doing in his life. Reuben is mad for a completely different reason. Reuben looks at Moses and says, "You've hoodwinked us. You've brought us out here to die. But you and I know the real story." Reuben is where he is in life. Why? Because of the personal choices that he made. I mean, he could be in the promised land if he wanted, but he chose to believe the evil report, right? One of them is mad at God because of the providence of God in his life. The other one is mad at God because of the personal choices they've made. And they've destroyed their life because of it. And sometimes we get mad at God because of the providence that we find. We get angry at God just like Korah. "I only have this skill set. I don't have very good health. I want to look this way, and I look this way. And before you were even born, it was predetermined how you would look, what kind of intelligence you might have. God, in his providence, has done some things in your life." And we go discontent because of what God is doing in and around us. One of the greatest scorners of Christianity, as you probably know, in our lifetime is Ted Turner. He would get up in front of a microphone, openly mock God, and openly mock Jesus Christ. And here we have someone that was born into a Christian, quote-unquote, community, who is just angry and irate at God. And he's just like Reuben. He wears it out on his sleeve. I once read an interview with Ted Turner. And he described why he was so angry and belligerent with God and why he left the faith. And here's what he said. He said, "When I was a young boy, my sister was very sick. And I prayed and I prayed and I prayed for God to heal her. And God never healed her. And therefore, I left the faith." And what Ted Turner is saying, I was so discontent with the providence of God in my life and in my family that I grew bitter. And a lot of times, you're bitter at God because of your health, you're bitter because of what job you have, you're bitter at your family or your spouse, what your kids have turned out like, just providential kind of situations, and we explode and get angry at God. Other times, we're bitter at God, not because of his providence, but because of the very choices that we make. I mean, you're discontent because you didn't get a promotion at work. But the fact of the matter is, you couldn't get out of bed for the training, you know, and so you didn't get the promotion. Many of us grow discontent with our marriages. And yet all the signs were there that you shouldn't have married this person to begin with. You closed your eyes to the will of God, you went forward, now you're really upset with where you are. Isn't it true that you're blaming God for a choice that you made? The Reubenites sit in bitterness at God still eating the manna, all the while it was their own decision to put them there. We see here how comprehensive discontentment can be. The irreligious and the religious are discontent in this passage. Those touched by providence, those touched by choice. Everybody is running for God. All we like sheep have gone astray, and that's why you need the grace of God in your life. Now, that's the story of discontentment. I want to stop. I want to close on one real high note here, something that's a blessing to me. I think it'll be a blessing to you. I want to focus on Korah for a couple of minutes. Korah was discontent because he served in the courts rather than in the inner sanctuary. The perfect will of God, the perfect will of God for Korah was to carry the sacred equipment and to lead worship in the courts. It's a glorious and high calling. It was God's perfect will for his life. If he didn't do it, nobody else would. He fit a real need with the nation of Israel, but Korah grew power hungry. Serving God was no longer enough. He wanted more responsibility, more power, more status, more visibility. And we're going to see next week, God judged him because of this sin. Now think about the shame of this. In that day, dignity was everything. Shame destroyed you. This man shamed himself. He shamed his family. He shamed the entire clan. And every time someone opens to the book of Numbers, hear out, they see the rebellion of a man named Korah. How'd you like to be a son of Korah? How'd you like to have your father or your grandfather's name written in the Bible that shows you as one of the great rebellers in the Word of God? And for generation after generation, right up until today, the name of Korah is associated with rebellion, bitterness, and discontentment. I want you to see something real quick. Look at verse 26. And we don't have time to look at the context. We'll get to it soon. And he spake unto the congregation and said this, depart, I pray you, from the tents of these wicked men. I want you to focus in on that phrase, tents of these wicked men. That's a very rare Hebrew expression. I only know one other place in the Bible where that expression is found. Turn to it. It's Psalm 84. One other place. They're standing in the tents of wicked men when they're judged by God. The ground opened up, swallows them whole in the tents of wicked men. Psalm 84 is the only other place I know where this expression is found. Look at verse 10 with me if you would. For a day in thy courts is better than a thousand, and I would rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than to dwell in the what? Tents of wickedness. That little phrase, I would rather be a doorkeeper, you know what that means? It means I would rather work in your courts, leading worship, carrying the equipment, than dwelling in the tents of wicked men. Oh, one more thing. Look at verse 1. Look at the introduction of the psalm. The chief musicians of Gittith, a psalm for the sons of what? Korah. We don't have a full history of what took place after Korah. But what a contrast between Korah in Numbers and the sons of Korah in the Psalms. The sons of Korah, this is a psalm that they rallied around. And look at the contrast. Korah rebelled because God called him to serve in the courts. And the sons of Korah come out and sing, I would rather be a doorkeeper in the courts of my God than to dwell in the what? Tents of wicked men. You know what this psalm is teaching us? We have to be tone deaf to miss the echo from Numbers chapter 16 here. It is teaching, give me nothing more than the perfect will of God for my life. Somebody broke the cycle. Some father, some mother along the way, somewhere in the lineage of Korah said, I'm going to break away from that discontentment. I'm going to break away from that bitterness. I'm going to do what God has called me to do. I'm going to make it my life calling. And I'm going to be content with the perfect will of God. You know what they could have done here in Psalm 84? They could have put sons of the Levites. Sons of Kohath. But oh no, they put it right there for everybody to read. Sons of Korah. The sons of Korah wanted to show the whole world that through the power of the gospel and through the grace of God, they are content with what God has called them to do. And this is a call for each and every one of us to break away from the bitterness that the world has indoctrinated us with, to break the cycle. The only thing holding you back from contentment in the perfect will of God is you lifting your eyes and putting them on Jesus Christ and Him alone. This is where God wants to take you, my friend. From the bitterness of number 16, you're not content with your family, you're not content with your job, you're not content with your health, to I would rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than to dwell in the tents of wicked men. By His grace and for His glory, He can make you completely content and joyful with all that He's brought into your life. Give Him your heart. Give Him your life. Break the cycle. Be the kind of person to put their eyes on Christ and be what do what Cora says here in Psalm 84. I am happy with the perfect will of God. Let's close with prayer.